Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Welcome to this episode of the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nerton, and today we're going to be looking at some issues around sustainability, clean technology and the environment, and how they affect brands and trademarks. And clearly this is a very important issue, and particularly topical in the light of the recent COP26 meeting and agreement. Today I'm joined by three long-standing Marx members, Gregor Versondert of Procter & Gamble, a former chair of Marx, Claire Lear of Edwin Coe, who is the vice chair of the Marx programming team, and Mark Devney of Clyde & Coe, who is the chair of the Marx IAM team. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks so much, James. Thank you for inviting me to speak.
Hi, pleased to be here.
Hi, thank you, James, for having us.
So, Mark, I'd like to start with you because I believe the IAM team has been looking at this topic of brands and sustainability recently. And I wondered if you could tell us about the issues in particular that you're focusing on.
Sure, of course. So as you all know, James, and I'm sure the other Marx members will know, our remit in general terms is looking at brands as assets, so intellectual asset management. So we have a longer term aim really of looking at how sustainability and issues around sustainability have an impact on brand value, essentially, and how closely you can relate sustainability initiatives to increases or decreases in brand value. Much of the work we've done so far actually has really been getting to grips with sustainability as a concept and as a topic. And of course, I think most of us have a general understanding of what sustainability is and what it means. But as we delved into it a bit more, we came to quite quickly realize that there were very many elements to sustainability. And so at the moment, we're looking at four different sustainability areas. So human sustainability, social sustainability, economic sustainability, and environmental sustainability. And of course, that last one is probably the one that most of us are focused on, particularly as you mentioned, with COP26 and looking at initiatives to address climate change. But what we've come to realise in studying the topic is that actually the four elements are intrinsically linked. And for businesses to really achieve in this area, they have to look more widely than simply focusing on environment. So one of the sort of first projects that we're embarking on is really to define those clearly and push out some materials on those with an aim of tying it all together. And then, as I say, the longer term goal is to tie it to brand value.
Could you just say a little bit more about those four categories? Because I think, as you say, the environmental aspect is probably what people are most familiar with. But what do the other three involve in very brief terms?
Sure, of course. So starting with, and I should say that there are a number of different models which broadly define what sustainability is. This is one that we have picked up. I think they broadly are the same. If you look at the various different models, they do talk about the same things. But in this one, so the first being human. So that's looking at the human assets within a company. So looking at things such as how well do you look after your people, welfare, health care, that kind of thing. So businesses paying attention to human sustainability, that's one of the elements that brands should be taking care of, and actually one element that consumers are now starting to pay more attention to. The second is slightly broader than that. So that's looking at social sustainability, which focuses more on the broader community, cultures, societal values, how is the brand engaging on that level, and how is the brand taking care of that area. The third being economic, which is a bit narrower, I guess, in some respects. So it's about sustaining profitability. And then finally, the environmental, which is, I guess, where we tend to focus a bit more, which is, you know, around what is the business doing to look after its carbon footprint, for example? What are the business methods that it's employing to, and how does that impact environment? You know, supply chain, for example, how are businesses adapting the way that they do things to ensure that they are meeting the environmental challenges that we face, and also, you know, the initiatives and the guidelines that are now being set out by governmental organisations.
Yes, and in things like the UN Sustainable Development Goals, I suppose, which, from what I gather, kind of cover all of those four different aspects, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that is interesting. And how do you think all this affects brands, and what are the challenges for brand owners going forward?
I think one thing that we have identified in our research is that consumers are ever more aware of these issues and demand more probably than ever of the brands that they engage with. Brands are expected to do so much more than they ever have been before. So where previously perhaps, you know, the way that the brand was communicating was very kind of solely around customer experience, for example, or quality of product or service, consumers seem now to be much more engaged with wider issues, and they expect brands to pay attention to these things. So I think one of the first challenges is working out as a business how you are addressing these issues and ensuring that any measures that you are putting in place that are coming from an authentic place. I think with the, you know, prominence of social media, the ability to dig into data, the ability to understand figures that sit behind these things, it's very easy and actually very quick to clearly understand where a business is achieving and is failing. And I think businesses that come from a place other than an authentic place, I guess, are quite quickly found out. So authenticity, I think, is key. I think having clear targets is also important for brand owners now. So we hear a lot now about science-based targets. So it isn't enough now simply to say, well, you know, we do take care of things in this area. We have, you know, a no paper policy, or we have a supply chain. We address supply chain issues in a certain way. Actually, consumers want to see the data that sits behind that. Okay, so you say that you do this, but, you know, show us. So I think ensuring that the right data is available to support what you're claiming as a brand is very important. And that then comes back to that kind of point around authenticity and the scrutiny now that brands have from their consumers. And I think consumers expect more and more that the brand aligns with their values. And if a brand does not align with their values, then there are many, many other choices on the market in most areas of business, and consumers will vote with their feet in that respect.
And of course, most of our listeners are IP practitioners. I mean, many of them will work in companies that probably have policies about sustainability and probably have staff who are devoted to that issue. So what can IP practitioners bring to that agenda?
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, as IP practitioners engaging with brands, we are often quite reactive to what brands are asking us to do, I guess, in some respects. I think there are some challenges around us as practitioners doing our bit, and often the emphasis is on, you know, consumer brands, but as a legal profession, for example, there's, you know, a huge amount that we can do. And I think the legal profession tends to lag slightly behind other areas of business. So I think, you know, as IP practitioners, I think ensuring that our own businesses actually are taking care of these things. I think our clients now are expecting more of us. So as brands develop their own policies, they actually want to know that their suppliers are also taking care of these things. They want to know that their suppliers, their legal providers, are also looking at supply chain, or also ensuring that their own suppliers are vetted in these areas. And just very recently, we had a client ask us as a firm to sign some quite broad sustainability objectives. We had to commit to certain things for us to remain on their panel of legal advisors. So I think there are challenges sort of in terms of us as legal providers. And I think in terms of supporting brands, I think, of course, you know, ensuring that we understand what the latest requirements are of those brands and how that might impact their IP position. Of course, you know, one brand is one element of the IP portfolio, but of course, as businesses are developing and innovating in technology areas to support their environmental goals, and that's also another area that we as IP practitioners can support them.
So that may be a good opportunity perhaps to bring in Claire and talk about what Marx has been doing in terms of sustainability.
Sure. So like very many associations, Marx had in-person conferences, which in 2020 obviously were cancelled as we all moved into a much more virtual world. This last year, Marx has run a very successful hybrid conference. So that's an part in person, and for those who could only attend virtually, like me, we had effectively a television studio, which was a massive improvement on all the Zoom calls and the Teams calls that we've all done. There are very positive, effects of having a virtual attendance in terms of sustainability. There are some quite interesting bonuses. So, for example, there's a massive cut down in carbon dioxide emissions because there is less people travelling. And then if you think practically in terms of staying at hotels, there's less washing. So there are some very positive effects from what has been quite a difficult situation. As you know, there are also the workshop, the coexistence workshops. So we've moved those online. These were formerly taking place on a country by country basis. And actually, it's been a really, really great experience because these workshops are actually targeted at younger members of Marx, with those with less experience. And the very positive thing about these in terms of social sustainability is that it has drawn together members from very diverse countries. So that's fantastic because it also helps maintain what we like to call the family feel of Marx. Again, it's a very positive outcome from quite a difficult situation. And then there's one other thing that I thought was quite interesting. We all talk about, as you know, environmental sustainability. And on a practical point, back in the day, the pack that you were given when you went to the annual conference was quite thick. And one of the things that Marx has done in trying to reduce its paper usage is to reduce the way in which delegates appear in that annual conference. So previously it was on a country by country basis and by your name. And that's been reduced just down to country basis, which has obviously cut quite a lot of paper out when you think that there's 600 plus delegates attending each time. And then on another very, very practical point, the secretariat at Marx is now only sending out invoices by email. So gone are the days when you used to get a paper one. So I think that's, you know, there are some quite interesting ways in which Marx is moving forward on this.
Yes, and I suppose all these things, even things that might seem small in themselves, add up, don't they? And as you say, a few bits of paper here and a couple of flights there and some cleaning in the hotel somewhere else do add up to a saving overall.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's a small step, but overall it's actually quite a large step. As I say, when you think in terms of the number of people who do actually attend these in-person conferences.
So thank you very much, Claire. So moving on to you, Gregor. As I mentioned, you're with Procter & Gamble. So from an industry point of view, how are you moving towards greener products or services, and what implications are there for branding, do you think?
Thank you. I'm going to answer these two questions separately. Let me first start with the action that has been taken. P&G has in place a comprehensive plan to accelerate action related to climate change. We also set a new ambition to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions across our operations and our supply chain, and that stretches from raw material to retailer. By 2040, and I would say even just as important, we have interim goals to be achieved by 2030. Now, what does that mean more practically? The basic idea is to reduce emissions across the operations, hence all P&G run facilities, by 50% by 2030, and again also by 2030, reducing emissions across the supply chain by 40%. So that will particularly affect, or does already affect, vendors and others. Now, this is of course something which is much bigger than one single company or country. And this is why we are tackling these challenges head on by reducing our footprint as one key measure. And the other one is, of course, leveraging our scale to foster unprecedented collaboration across the value chain. Of course, there are difficulties as we go, but nobody has all the answers. But we have said that we will not let uncertainty hold us back. And so in order to achieve the goals that I was just talking about, we will leverage existing solutions and seek, obviously, transformative new ones. What does that practically mean? Practically, that means that we'll have to act with urgency to reduce emissions with solutions that exist already today. In terms of reducing emissions across our operations, I may happily advise that from 2010 to 2020, we have reduced absolute emissions across our global operations 52% through energy efficiency and renewable electricity. Now, talking about renewable electricity, I also have good news to share in the sense that we are nearing our 2030 goal of purchasing 100% renewable electricity by already purchasing 79% at this point in time. And overall, the idea of really, obviously, is to decarbonize the supply chain and logistics, because the supply chain and logistics emissions from raw material to the retail are about 10 times higher than those of our operations. So this is really a challenge. But again, the idea is to cut down emissions by 40% by 2030. Part of that is obviously also to increase transportation efficiency. And just to give another example, Pampers is actively working with suppliers to reduce their carbon footprint and already avoided an estimated 1 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions from the production of its materials over the last 5 years, which I think is a brilliant result. Now, that leads to new solutions, and let me just give you some keywords, because this shouldn't take too long. We're thinking about or working on leveraging thermal energy, geothermal, solar, and renewable steam. We are advancing low carbon technologies for materials and packaging in particular. And of course, something which I just saw also on TV very recently, we're exploring ingredients made from captured CO2. I mean, all that serves one goal: to come to a decarbonized future. Now, if we talk about the second question, which is how does that affect branding? I think consumers want their preferred brands to help them with a more environmentally conscious lifestyle. And obviously, brands must respond to this development to keep on satisfying consumers' changing needs. But a brand cannot only be reactive. I think big brands need to lead the way. And that leads to a different aspect. Brand owners are, and Mark put that already, Mark already mentioned that, brand owners are corporate citizens, thus having special responsibility. Part of this responsibility is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to the extent possible, to have a vision and an ambitious plan in place to make these visions come true. And it goes without saying that a company must continuously check progress versus goals. In a nutshell, if you wish, and Mark already said that, brands of a certain size have become even more an important player in society. And in this capacity, you will have to operate carefully. And I think this is what Procter & Gamble does.
That's very interesting to hear all the things you're doing. And another thing that Mark said, of course, was that some brands are feeling the pressure from consumers to do this. Is that something that you've experienced, do you think, at Procter & Gamble?
Definitely. I mean, consumers' perception of big brands has been changing over the last years. And we know that consumers are just as responsive to green claims or green advertising as they are to health advertising, which then, from my perspective, means we'll have to pay attention that we give consumers the right information, because it's a much more sensitive space than many others.
And so what does that mean in practice then for trademarks or marketing or advertising law, if you have this greater focus on sustainability? Does it change what issues you're dealing with in practice?
It absolutely does, because at the end of the day, sustainability is in everything. Yeah, so it is embedded in our thinking, in our plans, in our strategy. Yeah, and this is why, particularly on the claims perspective side, you'll have to make sure that your marketing foes don't make mistakes, because in advertising, you easily run the risk of making mistakes due to the volatile situation that we're still facing. Because as you will be aware, the situation keeps on changing. There are new decisions every day. There is policy making. There is, to give you another example, the European Green Deal. Lots of things are happening at this point in time, and it's really difficult to catch up and always take the right decisions.
Thank you, Gregor, and thanks to Mark and Claire for taking part in today's podcast as well. There's so much to discuss on this topic that I'm pleased to say our three speakers will be joining me again in the next episode of Talking Marks, where we'll talk about issues such as what IP practitioners need to be doing about sustainability, greenwashing and green puffery, localization and recycling, and also getting a bit of a preview of future Marks initiatives on sustainability. So thanks for joining us on Talking Marks today, and do tune in to the next episode of the podcast where we'll continue this discussion and look at some of the practical challenges it raises.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.